Mikey's Breakfast on Brentwood and Billericay's Phoenix FM. Now, on the phone, I've got... I feel honoured. I feel honoured, Pam. I'm talking to, you. You're the CEO of St Francis Hospice, aren't you?
Yes, yes, I am. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Pam.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you.
That's okay. You're one of the sponsors of Phoenix FM. Now, I want to talk to you this morning about... I know it's Dying Matters Week next week, isn't it?
Yes, it is. This is a week that we... Traditionally, try to really get people to talk a little bit about end of life, what's important to them, what perhaps people should be thinking about to make sure that if, when that phase comes, which it comes to all of us, that their thoughts, their wishes, what they would like to have in place are taken forward. It's also an opportunity to promote what we do and what others do to help people at this stage of their life.
Now, possibly next Monday, I think it's going to be, we're going to talk to one of your employees and a lady that has had her husband, who sadly passed now, in your care about Dying Matters Week. We're going to go into that fully then. But how do you actually fit in with the Dying Matters theme?
So it is an opportunity for everybody who works on end of life care to come together, because we feel we're stronger together to try and get the message across. So for us, end of life care and palliative care, as we refer to it, it is what we do. So we are a key part of this, and we feel that the more people are referred to us as early as possible in their journey, because palliative care doesn't mean you've only got weeks to live. It can often be months. It can even be years. So the more we can work with people, then we can really help on this journey and help talk about, as I say, end of life, what it means, what's important. What's even more important is how do people want to live for the rest of their life? So we really try to focus on life as well as end of life. But we work with people from the hospital, the community, other voluntary sector. So we all come together, try to get the same messages out, because there are the country, and perhaps COVID will change this, I don't know, it could be one of the spin-offs, but the country is traditionally very nervous about talking about death and end of life. So, you know, people are very familiar with birth and a birth plan and what you'd like and what you wouldn't like, and sometimes the plans work out and sometimes they don't quite. But for end of life, it seems much harder. So we try to break down those barriers and say, let's talk about what's important to you, your family, your friends. And we've had some really fantastic pieces of work over the years where we've been out and about in the community. Obviously, that's going to be harder this year.
Yeah.
We work with a funeral director. So we all come together with this message to say dying matters to all of us. Let's talk about it.
Now, immediately, when you're saying Dying Matters Week, you immediately think, as an outsider to all this, of, oh, no, it's all right, I've already done a will.
Yes, I know.
It's a lot deeper than that, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, if you've made a will and I've made a will, then actually we're still in the minority, not the majority of people.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, my word.
We still find that people have not. They've thought about it. They want to do it, but they haven't done it. We definitely encourage that. But it's also things about, you know, if we all become unwell, do we want to be cared for at home? Do we want to be cared for in hospital? And I know it'll depend, but really getting those kind of conversations, not just have you made a will? Where would you like to be buried? How would you like the service to be? Those things are really important. But it's also, how would you like to be cared for? What's really important to you if you are not as well as you used to be and you can't do the things that you used to be able to do? So for some people that might be, you know, I want to keep absolutely in contact with my grandchildren, and we can make sure that if people are an inpatient with us, that we've got video links and all of that sort of thing. For some people it could be, you know, my dog is my family, and we would and do actively encourage pets being able to come in into the unit. So what matters to people could actually vary considerably.
It's so much deeper than I thought it was, to be honest with you.
Yes, indeed. And what is referred to as advanced care planning is really where, you know, people would go through, actually, I would prefer to stay at home. And then often, and advanced care plans can be changed. I think people do fear if they say, you know, I always want to stay at home and I don't want to go into hospital, but actually something happens and you think, hey, I do need to be in hospital.
Yeah.
So it can change, but it just enables that conversation, and it doesn't assume. I think that's the big thing. It doesn't assume that others might know better what an individual is thinking about.
Now, we know that St. Francis Hospice does some absolutely outstanding work, amazing work. And the Dying Matters is what you discuss and you work with on a daily basis, obviously.
Yes, it is. And as I say, from the moment that people do get referred to us, and we have a whole range of services which you and the public, I hope, know something about. But if, for example, people get referred to one of our groups at Pemberton Place, or they get a phone call from one of our services because they've been bereaved, such as Orange Line, then that for us is a beginning of a relationship. And some people, as I say, may just come in and out of the hospice into some groups and then go home, and then as the journey progresses, then they may get more support at home. Some may have to come into the inpatient unit, but as we've built a relationship, we will be, we hope, in a strong position to understand people, their needs, their fears, their worries, and some of that will be about pain and pain relief, and we should be experts in that. But it is about also the, not just the physical side, but the emotional side of what it's like when you're facing that stage of your life when somebody says to you, there isn't a cure for this, there isn't a treatment that's going to reverse this. And of course, this awful COVID-19 coronavirus is bringing that sharply into people's minds. And I think people are actually thinking about this much, much more than they ever would have done before.
I know one of the ladies we're going to be talking to on Monday, her and her family, her two children, were actually offered counselling by you. But you don't realise that when you talk about a hospice, you don't realise that they can sort out counselling for the family as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm very, very proud of all the services. But I think our counselling and support services is not fully known, because it is for the whole family and friends if needed. And the work we do with young people, and again, people think, oh, you're an adult hospice, which we are. But we do provide the counselling and support for young people, for whom it may be their parents, maybe their grandparents, their aunts, their uncles. And we find the benefit of that is we hope, fairly immediate, but it's also long term. And we have had some young people, perhaps in the teenage age, and like, no, don't need it, don't want it. And then when they face, perhaps they get married themselves or have a baby, and then they think, my goodness, I didn't deal with that. So people can refer to us at different stages. It hasn't got to be immediate. You've had a bereavement, here's the counselling. Because again, people need to move with those services when it suits them and when it's right for them. So fantastic array of support and counselling which people can have to help them.
Now, doing all this, because you supply this for free to the public, don't you?
We do.
And you rely on donations and any fairs or fates collecting money for you. So this COVID-19 pandemic must have hit you really, really hard in your bank account.
Yes, it absolutely has. So our funding, we get about 27% from the government through the clinical commissioning groups. And where we're based, we cover Essex and we cover London. So we're pleased with that. But I mean, that still leaves 70%+ to be found. So that comes from what we call voluntary income. And that is the community giving income to us. Various sources, as you say, events, lottery, shops, people leave us money in the will, legacies. So a whole range of things. But with the pandemic, we had to close all of our shops almost from immediate effect. So the money that they brought in has just stopped. And we are currently at the moment trying to assess, and we'll wait to see what the government says, but when are shops going to be able to reopen? How can you socially distance in a charity shop? interesting.
Yeah, it's all about browsing, isn't it, in a charity
shop? It's all about browsing. So that was a big one. Some of other areas. So obviously the marathon was postponed, not cancelled. And our fundraising team have done some fantastic innovative work about how you can do a marathon still at home or a run or raise money differently. And I'm really pleased that the government has also stepped in and they are giving us some money. Now, to get that money,
fantastic,
we need to be providing extra services. So I'm happy to tell you that we're actually doing more services than we've done before.
Oh, really?
To help the NHS. So if we can do that, then we're hoping they can give us money for 3 months. Our retail staff, we have furloughed, and some other staff. So I don't think the hospice ever thought, we didn't even know what furloughing meant.
No, me neither.
We're learning lots and lots. And actually that it is tough for staff as well, but we are really pleased that staff have seen this as a way, because they know in retail there's no shops open, so they can't come into work. So, but every week, I can't tell you, I am looking at what money's come in, what did we expect to come in, what is the gap? Oh, what are we going to do? So please, 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 if ever we needed our community support, and people are responding, so thank
Fantastic.
You. Fantastic. But keep on going, because we need you more than ever.
So Pam, if anybody's listening to this right now and they think, I want to give £5 or £10 to St Francis Hospice, how can they get in contact with you?
So our website should have all of the links on it, or ring us and we'll put you through to the right people. We are doing some initiatives at the moment around supporting medical and nursing staff. So onto the website, or give us a call, and we can then really make sure that we get through Twitter, social media. We've got a great Facebook account. And our number is 01708 753319, if people prefer ringing in.
Brilliant. Pam, thank you so much for this conversation. What I'll do is I'll put a link directly to the St Francis Hospice .org.uk website on our website as well, so somebody can find you if they just want to donate even a pound, anything.
Absolutely, even a pound. And we have found people are coming in with donations, which is absolutely lovely. So we've had donations of masks, gloves, all of the kind of thing that, like everybody else, we've been desperate to get. We've had lovely donations for the staff to, because they're on the front line, they're in every day working or in people's homes. So that has been so, so appreciated. I can't believe how generous the public, and that they're thinking of us, and not just generosity, but as you say, a pound can make all the difference.
That's right. Well, Pam, thank you so much. And we'll have another chat with one of your employees and a young lady again next Monday about Dying Matters Week.
Lovely. And thank you very, very much.